Well, welcome everybody once again to we're going to call this a t-shirt version. I got caught with three people calling me in the studio today when I was supposed to be off with my t-shirt on, but sometimes it makes you more relaxed. But this is a very important show we're doing today, kind of semi-live, I like to say almost live, because my buddy Matthew Parker from International Security Advisors LLC called me in light of this shooting in Washington, D.C., and we had another shooting later in San Francisco. So busy day, and I thought we'd get him in to talk about this. It's a super important subject. There's a lot of contradictions in this subject, and Matthew's got a lot of great answers. He wrote a great answer on LinkedIn. You guys should all check it out. So without further ado, Matthew Parker, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And you are on the live stream app from what state? So what you're out in the field, looks like, and what state are you in?
Over in Fort Jackson, Columbia, South Carolina today.
Oh, wow. That's a great picture. Great sound. So tell us what's going on with your article on LinkedIn and how, I forgot how that saying goes, art imitates life or life imitates art. You wrote about this very thing, how police can protect their government official details and how you train for that. And that's what your organization does. It's been doing it for a long time very well. And here we have an incident. And I don't know enough about it, but one thing I heard, unfortunately, and we don't let facts get in the way on the show, but just in case, I heard that the two people assigned to the detail were in their car watching the field, the two officers, right? Maybe that hopefully turns out not to be true. Could, account for a slower response, but a happy ending so far, nobody's dead. So tell us what's going on, Matthew. Tell us about this article and what's going on with all these public officials.
Well, you know, the political discourse in this country has gotten pretty bad. We've stopped discussing the topics, we've stopped negotiating, debating, and we call each other names now, and we use terminologies like we have to attack the Republicans, we have to stop the Democrats. And the discourse has almost gotten violent in its verbal back and forth. Now, that came to a head with the shooting of Representative Gabby Giffords. And shortly after that, we reached out to local law enforcement and said, when your elected representatives come home and they're doing community meetings, you have to know how to protect them. And we told them this was going to get worse. State law enforcement and our congressional leaders were hoping now they'll start thinking about this topic seriously.
Now, Matthew, we lost you for a second there. Bring your camera back a little more center. Okay. I'll fix this in post, but we lost you how you had reached out to law enforcement after the Giffords incident. And this was coming again, right? And did you get a positive response from law enforcement, or was it kind of like, you know, we know what we're doing, we'll take it from here?
Well, you know, it was mixed. Local law enforcement, we don't have the budget. This isn't a major responsibility of ours. If our elected leaders don't call us, we don't normally show up. So unless that department did it on a regular basis, it wasn't a priority. And then budgets being what they are, a lot of local law enforcement said, we just don't have the money for this type of training.
Well, I think it's interesting that they say it's not. I mean, I get what they're saying, right? So, you know, when I was at UCLA, we had diplomats come in there all the time. So we had to make that part of our daily routine. I get their argument that they don't do it that often. However, exactly to your point, this is a different time. This back and forth on right, left is aggression. It's violence in verbal format. And it only turns into physical format after it escalates. And people are baiting each other into doing these things, right? So I think they need to be more prepared. I think law enforcement needs to take this more seriously, needs to look at what you're doing more seriously. There is a reluctancy on police departments, since I was a police officer, to say, we know what we're doing, thanks, pal. But unfortunately, it takes a poor incident like this sometimes to raise awareness. So what can you tell people to raise awareness about this? Some things they don't understand about what's happening here. And explain how it's not the same old as it used to be.
Well, you know, after 9/11, there were some changes to the security of elected officials. And the top three in the House and Senate were given a permanent detail from the Capitol Police, which was new.
Oh, that was new.
And each congressional, it was.
Yeah.
And then each congressional office was told, find somebody who would work with local law enforcement on security. And it kind of fell to the wayside because elected officials said, I have to get out, talk to my constituents, and I can't be surrounded by law enforcement. Now, this was kind of a non-issue because if they're trained properly, you can still go out and shake hands. I mean, the Secret Service is taking the president out to events from 5 people to 10,000 people. It's not hard if it's done properly. Members of Congress just said, I'm uncomfortable with it. Then we had the shooting of Ms. Giffords. And then it wasn't about comfort anymore. It was about, we have to acknowledge this is actually a problem. And then we forgot about it again. Now, recently, members of Congress didn't want to go home and have public events because of threats. They were afraid of the crowds. They thought, you know, protesters were being bussed in. They couldn't guarantee their safety, so they didn't even want to have community meetings. This morning was the ultimate wake-up call. It's not about protesters anymore. Now this is about violence being done to elected officials. And thank God for the Capitol Police actually being on site. But I think it's time that maybe we need to look at state police assigning a trooper to an elected representative, maybe as a driver, in staying with them. You know, let the state police send somebody to Washington, become part of the staff of the elected representative. Because obviously Capitol Police doesn't have the capabilities or the manpower or the budget to take care of everybody in Congress.
Right, exactly.
So I think between the state police, local law enforcement, and then our elected, you know, representatives working together, this is an issue that can be corrected. This is something that can be addressed.
When I ran a guard company in L.A., one of our clients was a homeowners association where Schwarzenegger lived at the time. And he was still with his wife, and it was up in an area they call Pacific Palisades. Now, he had a CHP officer with him, several CHP officers with him all the time. California, I think we kind of do this. As far as the legislature goes, I think they do it to some of the officials, right? And they got it right a lot of the time. But a lot of the times, their getting it right was by their definition, which was, I'm a cop, I got a gun, stay away from us. Okay, well, what if I disagree with that premise? And I'm a bad guy, and I'm a determined aggressor. There's not a lot those guys are going to do without really good training, right? And I said this before, and I'll say it again. Police officers are not security. They're police officers. They're responsive. That's their job. They're very, very good at that. Come rushing in and doing something. But they're not designed to do proactive prevention without additional training. They're probably the best student for it. What do you think about that? What's your thought? You have a military background, which is not really responsive. That's make a parking lot out of that place over there. It's different, right? What are your thoughts on that? I'm not trying to knock the police because, you know, I'm red, white, blue police, but what do you think?
No, I agree with you completely. Law enforcement is, by its very nature, reactive. It's hard to be proactive. I mean, you can't just arrest somebody before they commit a crime.
Right.
Law enforcement is trained to go into the burning building. We're telling them, we don't want you in the burning building. We want you to take your protectee and get away from it. And they're not designed for that. That's not how they're put together. But we've trained over 600 members of law enforcement since 2011. Once they have the philosophy down, they can take their police training, apply it, and they do really well.
Right.
But it's about philosophy. Now, the problem today isn't that the Capitol Police didn't have rifles. It's not that the Capitol Police didn't have enough people. It's because a threat assessment wasn't done. Nobody sat down and said, several members of Congress at a known location, at a known time, over a prolonged period of time, we have poisoned political discourse. We have more death threats to members of Congress than we've ever had in the past. Somebody should have said, we need to move practice to Fort Myer, move it to Fort Belvoir, move it to the Army base of Fort Meade, move it to Andrews Air Force Base, move it to a secure location. So this isn't about lack of law enforcement. This is about the threat assessment not being done. And that's where law enforcement is at a disadvantage, because they're reactive.
I agree. And again, we're not knocking the cops. It's just a fact. It's a full-blown fact. That's just not their function. But if you supplement them with training like you have, then it can be their function in a good way, because they do have that other background of discipline, weapons training, things like that. So I agree with you 100%. Hard to say, hard pill to swallow, but hey, fellas, let's we got to be honest about these things, okay? It's almost a no-brainer in my world that if I was in charge of that detail, I'd say, you're not having this here. It's not going to happen in a public park, pal. I don't care what you say, we're moving it. But my advantage is I worked in corporate security for 10 years, ran two guard forces 10 years, did a lot of celebrities, a lot of personal protection. You know, I get it. I get that threat assessment part. And I did that for Fox and Disney threat assessment too, right? So how do you sell threat assessment? Because some people argue that if you're assessing a threat, that's even too late, right? Because now the threat's coming towards you, you have to assess it. I say, let's figure out a potential threat and avoid it before it even gets to you. And this would have been the case where we say a public park for government officials with Trump tweeting things all the time that make everybody insane and all these attacks on right and left politics, that's a formula for somebody to be aggressive with public officials in public. It seems like somebody should have said that. You know, if it wasn't the cops, it should have been the congressman himself, right? So I don't know. I'm probably preaching to the choir, but it frustrates me because I don't like to see people get hurt unnecessarily, right?
You know, the threat assessment process is done daily.
By the hour, almost.
What we teach our students, well, right, and what we've taught our students over the years is, you know, you do your base assessment, and you have to ask yourself who you're protecting is, in what situations do they place themselves? You know, do they go on TV? And do they say inflammatory things? Do they support, you know, controversial topics, subjects, causes? Now, you're talking about members of Congress, which are now at the lowest rating of approval in history. I mean, Congress has never been as disliked as it is now. We have a president who has the lowest approval ratings that we've seen in modern times. And we have violence in the streets between pro-Trump, anti-Trump, you know, pro-Obamacare, anti-Obamacare. I mean, we're having violence over the topic of medical care.
Right, right.
This isn't even, we're not talking about taxes. We're talking about, do we give medical care to our population that can't afford it, and we're having violence in the street over medical care.
Yeah, we're threatening to kill each other over measures that keep you alive. It's insanity. I think it's literally a mental illness. It's bizarre.
If you do the threat assessment and you sit down and you say, who's my protectee? What is the threat? Somebody should have said, this public park is a bad idea. Let's move it to a secure location. You know, when the president wants to play golf, they can take him to Fort Myer. Well, if Congress wants to play baseball, they can play on the baseball fields of Fort Myer.
So let me run this
military installation.
Yeah, let me run this by you. So here's how I used to train my, and I was no expert like you, okay? But I used, for lack of a budget, inability to hire somebody like yourself a lot of times, I use common sense. So here's what I said. Nobody on the detail has a bad idea. Nobody on the detail has an unimportant opinion of something. You're each individual assessment people. You are assessing minute to minute, second to second by what you see, and I want to hear about it. And I think what happens a lot of times in these details, especially in police departments, is you get the lieutenant running the operation, the sergeant's doing the tactics, and people follow orders. And their job is not to say, hey, Mr. Wizard, wait a second, I think we got a problem here. Their job is to follow the orders of the person running the detail. I think it's always better to empower the people on the detail with individual decision-making on the fly at the moment with authority to say, listen, I'm sitting here in the car watching the baseball game, and this guy just walked up to me and said, hey, are these Republicans or Democrats? I get everybody's ass out of there in 5 seconds. But sometimes people aren't allowed to make that decision. What are your thoughts on that when you train your people? How do you empower them to act? I think this is an important concept.
Well, you know, the protectee ultimately will make the decision as to what you're going to do. Whether you stay, you leave, you drive, you walk. I mean, the protectee ultimately makes that decision. But what we've told our students for years and what we've, you know, demonstrated is there's going to be a time when you have to say, sir or ma'am, we don't discuss this. You're leaving. And that begins with that very first conversation you have with them. I will never call you by your first name, Congressman. But if I walk up and say, John, you have a phone call. If you don't start walking towards the car, my hand is going to grab your belt. I'm going to lift you by your belt, and you're going to the car. So this has to be something we discuss, we rehearse, and you get the protectee to buy in. Now, it's difficult when the protectee says, I'm like everybody else.
Right.
I'm going to take my chances. But let's be honest. Harold, you and I can't walk into Congress and vote on a bill. You and I can't go to the White House and meet with the president and say, sir, I support or don't support your policy. Elected officials do that. So they're not like us. So we need to stop that narrative, and we need to explain, you know, your false modesty has to be put aside, and you have to understand it's a dangerous world, and it's time to start taking precautions.
Now, do you
but it
find...
starts with the detail.
I'm sorry. Finish your thought. Sorry about that.
No, it starts with the detail leader and the body agent just telling your protectee, this is reality. And if you don't support this program, I can't protect you.
Now, do you find that you are given, when I say you, I mean like the detail, the head of the detail. Are your people, when you get hired for a job, are they vested with authority to make a final decision in certain circumstances, or does it still have to wait for a freaking, you know, committee from the head guy that says, oh, I know there's a gun over there, but I don't feel comfortable leaving. You know what I'm saying? Do you get the, I know you get the buy-in for that, hey, John, you got a phone call, but you get the buy-in also of, listen, if my job is to keep you alive, you got to do what I say if it goes to shit. Right. I mean, that's no other way to put it. Right. Do you get those sort of buy-ins or do you still have that final say? So if the guy says no, what do you do? I mean, you have to take care of your own safety first if all the bullets start flying. Right.
Well, you know, we don't always get the buy-in. A lot of it is we want you to be seen and not heard.
OK.
You know, we're window dressing. But then that goes back to your professionalism. If you see a threat. And you know the protectee should go back to a secure location, to the car, to the green room, to their office. You have to walk over and say, sir or ma'am, we're leaving. And if it costs you your job later, that's fine because my conscience is more important than my pay.
That's right. And then your life too, you know, putting yourself in unnecessary jeopardy. Now, talk about the awareness you can raise for police departments what are the police going to get out of this? Because the police are typically assigned, you know, through the governorships or the state police or whatever, the city, to these protection details. I seldom see the government details go private, although it does happen, right? I mean, the guy maybe have a private detail at his house that the state doesn't pay for, right? Pretend you're speaking to the cops. What do you want to say to them to make them understand why this training is so valuable for them?
Well, you know, at this point, there's nothing we can really say. We can demonstrate. We can show them how many prosecutors, how many district attorneys, how many mayors, you know, how many elected officials have been attacked, threatened. And then you have, you know, Congressman Giffords, and then you have what happened today. So you can demonstrate it now. It's kind of late to try to tell them anything. But what we've done is we worked with the Maryland Police Training Commission and with the South Carolina Criminal Justice Academy and the Department of Criminal Justice in Virginia and six or seven other, you know, accreditation folks. And we got buy-in for our training program by law enforcement. So when we train law enforcement, they receive in-service credit. It's now recognized valuable training at the state agency organization level. And we reached out to higher education and got college credit for our training. So now we can demonstrate the threat, but more importantly, we can demonstrate the benefit. You know, your officer is going to get in-service credit that's vetted. The state, you know, law enforcement agency responsible for training has looked at our program and approved it. So I can't tell you why it's valuable if you don't already understand that. I'm talking to, you know, the void. But if I can demonstrate how others have seen it's valuable, and I can show you how it supports your mission for in-service training or individual education, you know, maybe we can get through to them.
Now, tell me about your military background and how you came this way towards the protection detail of it. It seems to be a more natural progression for some military guys I know than to come from the police side. Although the police people retire, they go that way too. They go towards executive protection, right? But the military side of it, they just seem more – and I've interviewed a lot of guys like you, right? And the military people just seemed more tactical and strategic, right? I don't see the strategy part with a lot of EP guys that used to be a cop or used to be a guard or bodyguard or something like that. Is that the military training where that's the strategery, as our president used to say, comes in?
That's a good way to put it. You know, in the military, we have to look at the tactics of our enemy. We have to anticipate their attack. So we think like them and we look at ourselves. If I'm the bad guy, how would I get to me? So we read their manuals, we know their tactics, we know their procedures, and we train ourselves to recognize it. And you know, you think like the bad guy.
Right.
Law enforcement, they don't have that. Again, they're reactive. You can't think like a petty criminal. You know people are going to mug people. You know people are going to shoplift. You know people are going to shoot people. But you can't do reverse engineering and say, if I was the bad guy, I would kill this person today and then be ready for them.
Yeah, it is a different discipline. Yeah, that's a good point. I was very good at saying, that's a bad guy right there. I mean, cops know that. Cops look at 20 people in a line and they say, that guy's dirty. Something's wrong with that guy. He's up to something. You shake him down. You ask him questions. You get a probable cause arrest. They're very good at that because they know people that way, right? And I might even be able to say that the guy in the neighborhood is he's a predictive burglar because he's done it five times. But those aren't strategies. Those are more observations that help us respond quicker, get to the core of the issues faster, put people in jail sooner. I wouldn't call them stratagems. So I, that's a very good point that you're bringing up, that the military is all about strategy and the tactics are used to deliver the strategy. If you don't have the strategy and only tactics, you're going to lose. That's my guess.
Well, years ago, when I was still active duty, we had a protective service detail deploying out of Fort Drum, New York. And we actually did some cross training with the Massachusetts State Police. Now, they had the law enforcement philosophy. We had the military philosophy. We combined them, and we took the best of both. And I think if you look at that, and then you look at the Secret Service, they overlap. And that's something the Secret Service and the Department of State has done really well. You take the military side of being proactive, thinking like the bad guy, and dealing with the what ifs. And then you take the best of law enforcement, which is, you know, dedication to duty, doing the right thing, being willing to put yourself in harm's way. You combine the two philosophies, you get a protective service agent. You get somebody who can jump in front of a bullet, but more importantly, he knows how not to be in those positions to begin with, how to avoid those.
Right, right.
I think there's something to be said about combining the two philosophies.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a very good way to look at it. And it shouldn't be viewed as, you know, an infringement on my space. You know, I got it. I got this police department thing I'm doing. I don't need your help. Everything's cool over here. I don't want to make it look like I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, these are turf issues, right? There's a lot of turf stuff in police departments, even between police departments. I mean, you know, if Culver City and Inglewood on the border were making some arrest, you'd fight over who's going to get the collar because you want it to look better, or say, hey, I don't want it on my books. I don't want this arrest on my books. You put it in your city, right? So the turf war with things is an issue too. So I think you're onto something here. I think this is valuable. And as it always happens, when you write something down or say it out loud, it goes into the universe and then it happens. And this is going to happen again and again. I think it's going to happen more and more because of the social discourse is so negative and so violent. And I think that's a strategy that is happening right now. There's a strategy among the proliferators of this stuff that they know exactly what they're doing. They're trying to incite these things. And watch the next thing that's going to happen tomorrow or the next day is we got a call for a complete gun ban everywhere in the world because the gun is what caused the problem, not the fact that everybody's fighting with each other. You know, yeah, it's a big problem. So give us how we can get a hold of you, Matthew, and how police departments can contact you right away. And by the way, you did mention before the show how sometimes you offer some of these services for very, very discounted rates for police departments, right? Or sometimes it's free if it's like in your own state or something. Tell us about that.
Well, what we've done is if you're a law enforcement agency or department and you want to host a program, we'll come to you. We throw everything in the trailer. We bring the program to you. And as the host, you know, we give you some free seats for your protective service folks. Now, whether that's witness protection or protection for a judge or you have the county executive, you know, you're getting free seats. The only thing we ask the hosting agency to do is reach out to their neighbors and let them know we're going to be there and try to fill enough seats where we can make it valuable to everybody. Now, normally training like this, you know, you're talking a cost between $2,000 to $4,000. We don't do that. Our costs are, you know, below $800 for a police officer. And it's because we know you don't have budgets. We know the money isn't there. So we will support law enforcement with free training to the best of our ability. If you host a program and we fill a class, you know, we'll try to get 6, 8, 10 of your people in free seats. We have two programs coming up, one in Atlanta, one in Chicago, both in July. And they're being hosted by private security, which is a little different for us.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But law enforcement still has priority of seating. So while we're teaching private investigators and private security and corporate security, law enforcement is always going to get into our program. I mean, that's our priority demographic. If they want to reach us, they can go to dignitaryprotection.us and visit our website. I'm available 24 hours a day. My number is listed online. They can seek me out on Facebook, instant message me. And if there's anything we can do to support law enforcement, we'll do it.
Matthew Parker, International Security Advisors, LLC. Give us a website one more time.
That's dignitaryprotection.us. Excellent. Or you can reach out to me personally on LinkedIn or Facebook.
Excellent. Matthew Parker, thanks again, my friend. Maybe I'll see you in Chicago. I might make a trip out there. I'd be very interested in taking a look at this and seeing it live in action. So thanks for coming on the show.
We'd love to have you. We'll open up a seat for you.
Oh, good. That's good. Yeah, I have a very low-budget show. I might need that help on that. All right. Thanks for coming on Security Guy TV. Follow us on Security Guy TV, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Google+, you name it. We're on the social media sites for distribution. And now, livestream.com. That's the new place. So good night, everybody, and thanks for tuning in. And Matthew, thanks again. Good night.